Welcome to the Victory Lane podcast for the last day of November 2020. Tonight we pick up again with Mike Lawton of VRG. Thank you very much for taking the time to tune in, and we'll see you in December with a couple of special episodes. So at this point, 2021, we're looking forward to a full traditional VRG calendar. That's what's going on. Have you published dates for events yet?
We have not published the dates. The dates are at this point the same as, or the same weekend as they've been in the past. We would support the VDCA at their Wild Hare in April. We would have our Jefferson 500 in May. In June, we would have the Thompson race, which is co-organized with the VSCCA. And then July, we would be out at Pittsburgh Vintage Grand Prix at Pit Race. And then August, we take a break. September would be Lime Rock Historics on Labor Day weekend. And then October would be Watkins Glen. And the dates are for everything except Watkins Glen is pretty well set. We haven't released the calendar yet, but we are going to be releasing it probably within November, I would say.
What goes into organizing an event on the scale of the Watkins Glen event?
Good question. In addition to being the president, I'm also the event chair of that event. So I can tell you exactly what goes into the organizing that. You know, we work with the track. We establish a date beforehand. There's, you know, from an economic perspective, VRG has to put forward a deposit in January, and then we pay the balance of the track rental in August or September, actually beginning of September. And as one of the nice things about Watkins Glen is that flaggers and grid workers are included as part of our rental fee. Some of the other events, we need to organize flaggers and we need to organize grid workers, but at Watkins Glen, that's part of our fee. We have to take care of timing and scoring. We have to make sure that there's a timing and scoring person responsible. We bring our own timing and scoring gear. We bring our own steward. We have been able to borrow the Watkins Glen pace car for a while, so we don't have to worry about that. But we open registration early. We let people register. We manage a guest list because the Watkins Glen event is by contract not a public event. So anyone entering the track facility has to be on a list of guests, which is, you know, going to be very different than something like the Lime Rock Historics. So we have to manage that guest list. We have to assign garages. We have to put the cars in the inappropriate run groups. And then during the event, we handle all of the timing and scoring, track on track management. We handle the any kind of driver committee, driver issues, as well as every car goes through a tech inspection at the beginning of the event. And our tech inspectors, unlike some other clubs, we don't do an annual tech inspection. We do tech inspection at every event for safety, not so much for compliance. But we want to make sure, you know, where these are older cars, we want to make sure that things haven't deteriorated that the car is safe and able to be raced in a safe manner.
Safety is a cooperative process in a race. So,
right. And that is really one of the founding goals or values of VRG is safe racing. And, you know, we're really between car preparation and driver behavior. That's something we feel very good about our brand, that we're managing both making sure that cars show up at the track prepared appropriately and making sure that drivers behave appropriately while they're at the track and, I guess, on their way there and on their way home, but that's not really our concern.
We certainly no shenanigans in the motel parking lot. This isn't college. We're all
Or Days of Thunder. That's right.
Or Days of Thunder, yes. So, yeah, right. Oh, God. Tell me, what would the Watkins Glen experience be like as a guest, and maybe give us a kind of visceral lap around the track.
You're coming as an entrant, not as okay. So the first thing we would do is if you register, and you know you can register and pay online. The system that we use would flag you as a first time entrant. We have what we call our driver orientation program, which, normally is, handled in a classroom at the Glen. And this is the case at any of our races. Any first time VRG racers, whether they're experienced SCCA racers or experienced, IMSA racers or experienced SVRA racers, anybody who's new to racing with VRG, we ask to attend this driver orientation program. This year we did it online beforehand, with a video, but normally it's done, there. And the idea is to just make sure that everybody's playing by the same set of rules.
Right.
As far as passing, as far as, what our flags mean, as you know, just basically driver behavior, and also to talk a little bit about what would happen if your behavior is not what we consider appropriate. So that would be sort of the driver, the initial orientation. And then really it's just a question of coming to the track and registering. Showing your vintage license. This year we had a nice t-shirt to hand out to people. You get a wristband and you go in and you set up your paddock spot, up in the track area. And, so this year there were no social events really by the pandemic rules. Ordinarily we can't have really a catered social event because of the Watkins Glen rules unless we cater through them. But we have, you know, little get-togethers in the paddock and so on. That would be Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night. We would start out Friday morning. First two sessions are usually practice and sort of a qualifying session, and then Friday afternoon would be probably the first race, and then two to three races on Saturday, and then a couple more on Sunday. We, to this point, have used just the long course, the traditional course with the boot and the bus stop at Watkins Glen. There's been some talk about trying the short course, but we've not done that to date. And that's really it. I mean, it's you know, we as far as the timing and scoring, this year we went fully digital for the pandemic. So we asked people to use Race Monitor or Speed Hive to look at their timing and scoring data.
Right.
As long as everything goes well and there's no issues, you know, the other parts of the organization, the Black Flag Steward and the driver committee would never come into play, and everybody would come and use up lots of tires and pack up their cars and head on home and have a great time.
Sounds great. So in a Alpha Spider, what kind of lap are we turning?
So in the 73, I think it's around 220. In the 62, I think it's probably around 225 to 230. The 62 has a smaller motor. It's a 1600. It gets up to about 130 miles an hour, and that's about as fast as it will go. It's not really, you know, it's a great car. I love it, but, It's probably happier at a place like Lime Rock, where it's not quite as fast a track.
Give us a walk around the track. What's a lap at Watkins Glen like?
Well, it's interesting. So you come down the main straight. The first several turns. So this is all part of what you would see in the NASCAR races. This is the main course, included in the short course and the long course. Turn one is a downhill right-hander with a lot of run out and a big berm, on the left. If you watch NASCAR races, they all drive around the outside of the berm, because it's paved out there, but we tend to frown on that and we try to keep people on the racetrack. And then from there you go, there's another right-hand turn to start going up the uphill S's. The uphill S's lead to the fastest part of the track, which is a straight that leads to what's called the bus stop, which is a chicane that was put in to reduce speed in the downhill right-hand or the diving turn. The bus stop chicane is actually quite fun, and I find that a lot of people go through there quite slowly, and there's really not that much need to do that. It does slow you down somewhat, but it's not a true bus stop, that's for sure. And then there's a downhill blind apex right-hand corner that leads onto a short straight and continues down the hill to another blind apex left-hander that takes you into the boot. And the boot is the part of the track that the NASCAR, the short track, does not use. If you were doing the short track, it would cut off at the end of the downhill turn and be a straight that connected you to a fast left-hander. So it would take out one, two, three corners, well, four corners on the track. This downhill left-hander takes you into the boot. Then there's another short straight to the slowest corner on the track, which is a uphill right hand, which is the toe of the boot. And that's the corner where I think even if you were in a Camaro, you'd wish you had about 100 more horsepower, because the car just doesn't, the entry is slow and you feel as if you can't get out of the corner. But then it leads to another short straight to called the heel of the boot, which is about a 90 degree right. And then there's an off camber left, which enters you back onto the NASCAR part of the track. And then a very fast left-hander and a slightly slower right-hander, and you're on the pit straight and headed for the green flag or checker flag or whatever flag you're headed for. And the pits are on the right. So it's quite a long track. As I said, 2 minutes and 20 seconds, 2 minutes and 30 seconds is probably a very, very slow lap at a lot of tracks. But at Watkins Glen, that's not a slow lap at all. That's you're probably averaging 90 plus miles an hour over the lap. So it's not a short, windy, technical type track. It's the car is moving most. And it, like I said, the slowest corner is the uphill at the toe of the boot, and that is a third gear corner in both of my cars. So you're typically third and fourth the whole way around.
Running hard.
Yeah, it's a famous track, and it's a famous track for a reason, because it's a great track to race.
Would have to imagine that first time at Watkins Glen has to be quite a thrill.
It is. And we had quite a few people, actually a couple of my friends had never been there before came this year. One guy with a E30 M3. And another guy with a Pinto, and they both had done quite a bit of quite a number of laps at Watkins Glen in iRacing and enjoyed it. And that was what made them want to make the trip. They both said, you know, it's fun in iRacing, but it's 100 times more fun in real life, being on the track and feeling the elevation change and, you know, feeling how fast you're actually going in some of these corners is quite a lot of fun. And it's not a track to take lightly because there's not a lot of runoff in a lot of places. There's the blue hedges that everybody kind of jokes about until you encounter them. They are quite right up against the side of the track in a lot of places. So, you know, you want to be careful as you learn the track. But once you're comfortable, it's a great place to race. And it's not just a good racetrack to drive. In my mind, I tend to differentiate between good tracks to drive and good tracks to race. I think Watkins Glen is a good track to drive and to race. There are other tracks that I think are good tracks to drive, but maybe not as good, don't offer as many passing opportunities, so they're not as good to race.
So a good track to drive is a track that would be a lot of fun in a high-performance event where passing was not a question and you were just trying to do one fast lap or something like that.
That's right. I think, you know, and the thing that we tend to really try to emphasize at the driver's meeting and try to encourage people to think is that, you know, what you want is a battle. You want a race. You want somebody and that competitor may be in a completely different car than you, or he may be in a very similar car to you. He may be a very different person from you, or maybe a friend of yours that you've known for a long time. Maybe somebody you never met. But if you can go around the track and have a back and forth battle with him, you know, for a lap or a couple of laps, that's to me, and to I think a lot of the people who come to the event, that's vintage racing. And Watkins Glen provides a great opportunity to do that. And we try to do the same with our event.
Well, it certainly sounds like you've obviously had practice at this as the event chair, but it is fascinating to think about the complexity.
Yeah, and I mean, the way I look at it, honestly, quite frankly, is I run the event the way I would want an event to be run if I was a competitor. You know, I keep going back to that as I'm planning things, because I'm not running the Watkins Glen event because I'm making money, and I'm not doing it because, you know, I want any kind of, there's nothing in it for me really.
Right.
But I do it because I want to put on an event that people enjoy, that, you know, that want to race and want that feeling of, hey, you know, we just went around three laps and battled back and forth and back and, hey, you passed me there, I passed you back there, hey, you want a beer, you know, let's talk about it, you know, that's what racing is all about.
Yeah. So, what about Lime Rock? Obviously a very different place than Watkins Glen.
To me, I've done a lot of laps at Lime Rock too. And the thing that I kind of go back to when somebody asks me about racing at Lime Rock is the key to a fast lap at Lime Rock is getting the car going and not slowing it down. Mm. And really, I mean, I've never raced on an oval, and I wouldn't say this necessarily to diminish Lime Rock in any way, because it's a great place to race. But to me, it kind of almost feels as if it's an oval, because the goal at Watkins Glen is to get the car going but Watkins Glen requires horsepower. Lime Rock requires momentum from pretty much any car. The key at Lime Rock is using as little of the brakes as possible. The key at Watkins Glen is, you know, being able to accelerate out of the corners. But at Lime Rock, if you're not accelerating out of the corners, you're you're doing a very slow lap. Mm. So,
well, of course, in my mind's eye, Watkins Glen, what I see is some very rowdy behavior, but Lime Rock, it looks like a golf course almost, right?
It's... Yes. Yeah. And I mean, Lime Rock is in what they call the quiet corner, right? The quiet corner of Connecticut. And it's very well placed in terms of getting there. It's convenient from Boston and New York City, where Watkins Glen is a little bit more, you know, convenient from Rochester, but it's about a 6-hour tow for me. I'm outside of Boston. So it's further to get to Watkins Glen. But you know, they are different tracks, and it's a lot of fun to do them both. I don't know that I would want to choose between them. I'm just really happy that I get to race them both.
And of course, VRG will be at both of those places next year. Calendar to be announced shortly, so that's great stuff.
Yes.
What's the direction for 2021?
So what we've, obviously we exist to put on the races for the people that, with the cars that want to do the races. You know, we want every year we survey people. Every year we ask them what track they want to race. Every year they say Watkins Glen is number one on the list. So to us, that means we need to have a race at Watkins Glen. We also recognize that, the cars or the 30-somethings these days, if they're looking at vintage racing, they're not going to be looking at a 1962 Giulietta Spider or a MGA or, whatever older car, because that has no connection to them. What they're going to find fascinating is a 3 Series BMW or a Porsche 944, something like that. And those are, at this point, getting close to 20, if not more than 20-year-old cars. And so we raised our eligibility date to 1989. And by doing so, we knowingly are now including the 3 Series BMW, the early 3 Series BMWs, the early M3s, the four-cylinder ones, the 944s and even 944 turbos. And we know that there are a lot of cars out there that are either racing still sort of with Porsche Club once a year or twice a year, or with AER. There's a lot of 3 Series BMWs. We really think that that's the kind of car that we would like to see start to look at vintage and see, find out that there's something here that they're going to enjoy. Give it a try. We had, like I mentioned, I had a couple of friends who had gone to the Glen for the first time. There were also quite a number of people, I think it was over 10, who had never raced with VRG before, who came to Watkins Glen this year, some from PCA, some from various other clubs. And that's what we're looking, that's where we think growth is going to come from, are those the cars that the 30 and 40 something people are drawn to and are interested in. So we want to make sure we have a place for them. And, we want to find the people with those cars who have them well prepared and the drivers have the right mindset to participate in vintage racing.
We should also say that those cars represent tremendous value.
Yeah, no, like a Volkswagen GTI, same thing. Early 80s, they were, I think my second car, when I was younger, my second car was a Volkswagen GTI, and it was an 87. That would now be eligible with VRG to race. And that's something that has, I'm kind of unique at this point. I'm racing a car that's older than I am. The cars that really have the appeal to me from when I was growing up were exactly that, GTI and 2002s and early 3 Series and that sort of thing.
There are no more cheap 2002s though.
Yeah, that's true. But we did have a good number of 2002s at the Glen, actually. I think we had 8 of them.
Oh, they're great cars. And yeah. I remember when they were very cheap. Not anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, but the under 2 liter Trans Am, I mean, that's something that's really, I mean, we also, of course, we have a great group of Formula Fords, and I've sort of neglected to mention that because I don't have a Ford. But you know, in previous years, we've had more than 50 Formula Fords at Watkins Glen. And, you know, that we're giving them a place to bring out some of these cars that haven't had a place to race in a long time. And, you know, it's a great group. They have great camaraderie. They have a party after. They give out wreaths. They have a little party, usually Saturday evening. Of course, all this is in a normal year. It's, you know, you can get into a Formula Ford, I think, for under 15 grand and, you know, go have a ball racing with these guys. It's really, I think, also another growth area that, you know, people can look at and getting into vintage racing for relatively short money. Come check it out and have a good time and hopefully come back.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second, because I'm sure that's a topic of interest to people that might be listening to this. If I'm located in the New York, New England area, obviously VRG is the nexus of that kind of thing. So if I'm interested in vintage racing, who do I contact? How do I get into it?
Well, that's an interesting question. What I would suggest, honestly, is come to a race. Unless you're somebody who already has a car, you know, one of these cars that we've been talking about that's, you know, you've been looking for a place to race it and it's just sitting in your garage. That's a different situation. If you're just, hey, you know, I think this vintage racing seems cool, I might like to give it a try, come to a race. You know, reach out to me, reach out to the event chair of the Jefferson 500 if you're in the DC area. Reach out to someone and come to Lime Rock and you know, if you're a New Yorker or Connecticut or New Jersey, and walk around the paddock and see, you know, take it all in and you know, there's many, many, many different ways to vintage race. There's a lot of people who choose very unique cars, just because that's their passion. And that's what really speaks to them. Then there's other people who would rather, race in a spec series, like a Formula Ford. So there's all different, flavors out there of vintage racing. If somebody has their eye on a particular car and wants to know if it's something that they could race with VRG, we have an eligibility committee. And that's all linked from our webpage. You know, they can tell you, okay, well, that car would be good, but you need to put a fuel cell in it. Or that car has, you know, it's gone so far from what we would accept that maybe you might want to keep looking and find another one. But usually we're able to work with people and, you know, as long as you don't have an Alpha GTV with a Corvette motor in it, you're probably going to be okay.
Well, that might be exciting, though, a GTV with a Corvette motor in it.
It would probably be really exciting, but I'm not sure we'd have a place for that.
Right. Answer starts with contacting somebody and getting involved.
Yes.
Before you buy a car, give us a holler.
Or, like I said, if you have a car, you know, and you think, and you have a pre-1989 production car, or you have a Formula Ford, and, you know, you're looking for a place to race it, or you're, you know, you've been racing for years in Rocky Mountains or Texas, and you're interested in making a trip to Watkins Glen to cross it off your bucket list, by all means, reach out. We're happy to talk people through what it takes to come and join either Watkins Glen or join us at Lime Rock or Summit Point or any of the races.
if I'm on the novice end of the spectrum, do you guys have a driver's school?
We do have a driving school. It is in conjunction with the Jefferson 500. It'll be, so the Jefferson 500 will be Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Thursday is a test day, and Wednesday and part of Thursday are the driving school, are our annual driving school. And it's quite impressive. There's been a lot of time and effort and thought put into the curriculum. We use a combination of, you would need to bring a car. It does not need to be a race car. You can do the driving school in a street car. The only thing that you would miss would be, if you did the driving school in a street car, is you wouldn't be able to participate in the Jefferson 500 on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But if you bring a race car and you complete the driving school successfully, then you're allowed to, you can immediately join the Jefferson 500 and race that weekend where you are. I would highly recommend that for someone, even if they're thinking about getting into vintage racing, because we use the training cars on the skid pad, the Bill Scott training cars. I think they're Impalas or the, you know, big American cars, to learn dynamics of cars in a skid and that sort of thing. It's a professional quality race school. But it's not priced like a professional quality race school, because we don't want to turn anyone away because of price. We're sensitive to that. So we cover our costs for the school, and that's really it. We don't make any money on it. We look at it as an entry point for people. And if, you know, we get 30, 40 people at the school and 20 of them end up racing with us, that's a win.
Harvesting 20 out of 30, that's genius level marketing.
Yep.
What does it cost to go to the school? Sorry.
I think it's $500, $550, something like that.
And I get to drive an Impala on a wet road and pretend.
Yeah, you can live out your Dukes of Hazzard fantasy.
I'll be there.
I highly recommend it for, like I said, and some of the other race organizations around are actually funneling people to our school, because it's, for a smaller race organization, it's hard to put on the quality of school that our chief instructor and his team have put together. It's really, really quite remarkable, and we're very proud of it. And those, you know, we do a lot of, as a club, we do a lot of surveys, because ultimately, our members are what is motivating us to do what we do. We always get super high marks from the people who have completed the school, and quite a number of them have gone on to to race with us. There's actually a level one and a level two school that run at the same time at Summit Point, that the level two is intended for experienced racers who just want to learn more about car control and work on, you know, feeling more comfortable in their car. Level one is for a novice to vintage racing or to racing in general.
Right. So. I've talked to a lot of people about schools, and I think the thing that you cannot stress enough here is that $500 for a race school, lots of track time, professional instruction, that's Black Friday pricing right there. Good value.
Yeah, we actually, some of our chief instructor and one of the other instructors took a trip out to California last spring to look in on the Vara race school that they run in the spring.
Yeah.
Or maybe even in the late winter.
It's usually.
And came back and, you know, felt that that was very well done and really appreciated some of the concepts, and were planning to, had already revised the curriculum of ours to kind of take advantage of some of the great ideas that they saw out there. Unfortunately, we didn't have the school this year because of the pandemic, but those ideas and thoughts and good thinking is going to be incorporated in the 2021 school. At Summit Point.
How many members are? How strong is VRG?
So we are up to member number 1,100, I think. Not all of those are active. I think of active members, it's probably around half of that. By active, I don't necessarily mean active racers, but active, annual dues-paying members. Roughly 400 to 500 active members, we have members mostly on the East Coast. We do have a few that are spread throughout the country. We have some members in Arizona and California and Wisconsin. We don't see them as much as we'd like, but about 500 members.
Other ways to participate in racing with VRG? I assume that there are other duties associated with racing that people perform at VRG.
Absolutely, yes. Part of our, once you participate in the school, if you're a novice, you get a form to that paves your way to a full license from a provisional license. And one of the requirements is that you participate, at least observe, but hopefully participate in what SCCA calls the specialties. So, go check out what timing and scoring does. Go check out what a flagger does. Go check out what tech does. Go check out what the chief steward is doing. At other tracks, other than Watkins Glen, of course, the flaggers are volunteer. At the Jefferson 500, I know we organize the flaggers every year, that's certainly absolutely a great way to get involved and get the best seat in the house, to watch the cars on the track. If buying a car or renting a car or borrowing a car and going to the school and participating with your hands on the wheel isn't for you, then there's certainly a lot of other ways to get involved and spend a fun weekend with friends at the racetrack.
What do they say? Walk a mile in the other guy's shoes.
Right. Well, it's simply that. And, there's inevitably at every race, there's somebody who's timing isn't showing up correctly, or the car number is listed wrong, or their group is wrong, and we'll sort that out. But be patient, and the timing and scoring team is very busy. There are cars on the track. They're obviously distracted with that and focused very much on that. I think as competitors, there's a lot of moving parts that make the whole machine work. Just like in your car, the machine of the race, there's a lot of moving parts, and whether it's the flaggers or the timing and scoring or even the tech people, we have inevitably there's some concern at tech that something that's presented is not. It happens at least once a year that something that's a car is presented as, and it just seems not to be safe. And there's lots of hard feelings and that sort of thing. And, honestly, the tech guys are just there. They're not there to be arbitrary. They're there to make sure that your car is safe when you put it on the track and it's not going to damage you or someone else. That's a very important part of what we do.
That's a great way to put it, that, they're not there. They have no animus against you.
Yes. And I mean, even at that, I've had my Julietta at New Jersey. I showed up at tech and the tech inspector identified that the Panasport wheels that I had on the car had little hairline cracks in the spokes. that I hadn't even noticed because they had been painted over.
Wow.
Thankfully, I had other wheels because it probably saved me from a very serious issue. I didn't know who gets down and inspects carefully their wheels. Well, the tech guy did.
If the tech inspector finds a small flaw before it becomes a big flaw, that's a huge benefit, you know.
Absolutely.
May not be the news you want on Friday afternoon. But.
Right. No, it's certainly not great news unless you happen to have another set of wheels. But hey, I'd rather have him find it than find it out when I'm, you know, when the car's sitting on the frame in a corner somewhere and the wheel's rolling off down the side of the track.
This is a great reason for becoming an active participant in the club and taking the uphill, you know, come in, volunteer, meet some people.
Yeah, and what you say reminds me of a story from our New Jersey event, which sadly we've not gone forward with, but the last year that we had it, a longtime SCCA racer came and went to our event for the first time, and we were sitting around, I think it was Friday night, drinking beers and eating, I don't know, whatever, chicken or whatever they had cooked up on the barbecue. And he says, you know, he looks at us and he says, you know, this is really fun. And we're like, well, yeah, it's supposed to be. Isn't that why you do this? He says, well, when you go to, you know, if you're in one of the really competitive SCCA classes and you're in a national race, sure, you're still drinking beer, but you're drinking beer in your trailer, looking at the rule book, trying to figure out how to go faster. Here, you're not doing that. You're sitting there and you're hanging out with people. You're drinking beer. You're swapping stories, and you're talking about how much fun you had. And so it's kind of a different perspective. And that's, you know, to me, that's having raced SCCA and having raced vintage. That to me is the difference. It's not, you know, it's no less racing. It's just more. Not less racing, but more friends.
And a big difference is you're sitting in the trailer figuring out how to go faster, or you're sitting around with those other people and they're figuring out how you can go faster. Well, now we're getting into philosophy. This could be dangerous, right? You know?
Well, I mean, there's philosophy behind everything, isn't there? No, I think, you know, I mean, hopefully, the spirit of VRG or the way we look at things is kind of been evident in what I've said. We made up some T-shirts this year, and on the back it said, "Cool cars, safe racing, great friends." That's really what we're trying to do.
That's a pretty good summation. The magazine, of course, appreciates VRG is a good partner. Certainly, you know, you guys do a lot of marketing to advance the sport. Given that you participate, or even in the case of Watkins Glen, sanction the event, people that are out here in the West and in the center of the country who want to look at going to Watkins Glen, obviously give VRG a call, get it on your schedule. It's a bucket list thing and you can do it.
Yes, we had we had someone from Texas this year. And like I said, we often have people there's a gentleman who comes pretty much every year from Wisconsin, wasn't able to make it this year, but, it'll be great to see people. We enjoy meeting new friends from all over.
What's on your bucket list, Mike?
Well, got to be something in Europe because I've raced. Well, the only track that I haven't been to in the U.S. that I'm really excited to go to would be Road America. I've raced at Sears Point, at Laguna Seca, and at most of the tracks, or at least at Trombont, which I love in Canada. It's become kind of a joke how much I like Trombont because they really like to get us back there. I haven't been to Mossport. I'd like to go to Mossport. I wouldn't say that's bucket list. That'll happen because that's not terribly far away. Road America is probably the one that I would put on the list. that I think is going to take a bit of an effort to get there. But will happen. Pit Race also is a great track. The new circuit, recently extended, is I really enjoy racing there. It's well worth the trip.
Mm. So have you been to Daytona? Have you been to COTA? Have you been to Laguna Seca?
I have been to Laguna Seca. I have not been to COTA or Daytona. I've been to Austin and Daytona, for other reasons, but I've not been to the racetracks.
You forgot to trailer your race car along with you.
That's right. Well, I can't, you know, Daytona was spring break when I was in college. So,
oh.
it was a little early, a little bit before that.
I don't remember much, but it was a great trip. All right. Well, good afternoon
Appreciate
to
it.
You,
Thank
Mike.
You.
Thank you for being on.
All right. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.